If modern country music has a symbol, it has to be the guitar. Guitars are so ubiquitous today that it's hard to imagine any popular music form, let alone country, without them. In part two of the series, Honky Tonks, Hymns, and the Blues, Paul Brown explains how the guitar got to the country.
If you were to transport your ears back about a century, you wouldn't hear much guitar picking on the porches of rural America. You'd probably hear something like this.
The banjo seems to have moved into rural areas everywhere in the Southeast long before the guitar did.
Bill Malone is author of Country Music USA. Joe Wilson, executive director of the National Council for the Traditional Arts, says the combination of banjo and fiddle is the foundation of American folk music.
Before the Civil War, violin was almost the only widespread instrument of that sort, and the banjo. The banjo came from Africa and was combined with the violin in the Virginia Tidewater. In the 1600s, we don't know exactly where, but that's the root of the root of the root of American traditional music, the meeting of that African and European instruments.
The guitar came early, too, but to a different segment of society.
Benjamin Franklin was a guitar player. Polly and Maria, who were the daughters of Thomas Jefferson, were guitarists. It was an elite instrument. It comes from the Valley of the Kings. It's on Ramses' tomb. It's engraved there. It was Hittite.
European settlers brought the guitar to the Americas, and it remained in the hands of the well-heeled until after the Civil War, when Joe Wilson says several things happened.
There was a new prosperity, and there was mass publishing of sheet music.
And there was a generation of young women looking for refinement and a less expensive vehicle to express it than the pianos and reed organs of the day. So began the parlor guitar movement, a huge fad in the latter half of the 19th century. Women throughout the Northeast took up the guitar. Teachers combined European classical techniques with a few tricks of their own. The music was delicate, plucked with the fingers, not strummed. Late Elizabeth Cotton, composer of the folk standard Freight Train, was a parlor guitarist, says Joe Wilson. So's Etta Baker, who's still alive and at the age of 90 still playing. In a 1991 NPR interview, she said she learned the style from her father.
He showed me on the guitar where to put my fingers, and he kept working with me along until he trusted me to hold a small guitar he bought for me. And the first piece I learned to play was Dewdrop.
Most of the descendants of the parlor guitar movement, however, learned from their mothers, the original parlor guitarists. The fingerstyle playing of one of the most influential country guitarists, Merle Travis, has its roots in the parlor guitar.
Travis would always say that he learned from Mose Rigger.
Joe Wilson.
And Mose Rigger would tell you that he learned from Kennedy Jones, and everybody else did. And these players knew that Kennedy Jones got it from his mother, Mrs. Alice DeArmond Jones, who was born in 1863 and who played in this style of guitar.
But how did instruments and a style that began in the urban parlors of the East make their way to Muhlenberg County in western Kentucky, where Travis and Rager and Kennedy grew up? In 1872, Aaron Montgomery Ward sent out his first mail-order catalog, a single 8x12 page with no illustrations. In 1888, Richard Sears and his partner Alva Roebuck mailed out their first catalog. Richard Johnston is the author of A History of Martin Guitars.
Sears and Ward's, they're going out into parts of the country where people might live 200 miles from the nearest music store, but they were only a couple of hundred yards away from their mailbox at best. And so, you know, suddenly there's this tremendous increase in interest in playing fretted stringed instruments, especially the guitar.
The catalogs were able to feed the demand thanks to mass production techniques that guitar makers developed at the end of the 19th century. But the spread of guitars and the parlor style of playing was not just a matter of logistics, says National Council for the Traditional Arts head Joe Wilson. The parlor guitarists wanted to offer an antidote to the minstrel shows that were popular at the time.
Before the Civil War in 1840, minstrelsy got started, dressing up in ragged clothes and blacking the face, supposedly as imitating black slaves. But it went all over the world. It was our first huge popular music movement. Minstrelsy was a show business thing, but so was parlor guitar to a degree. There were concerts around the country, and it allowed women to play for each other and play in the parlor and play some on stage without engaging in that kind of racism and that kind of laughing at poor people ethos that went with that.
Wilson says one of the most famous early country guitarists was actually influenced by the music, if not the racism of minstrelsy, Maybelle Carter.
When I started playing the guitar, I didn't have nobody to play with me, so that's how I developed the style of picking in the rhythm, too, you know. And they call it the Carter Scratch now, some of them do.
Carter used her fingers, like the parlor guitarists, but historian Bill Malone says she was trying to imitate banjo players.
She was trying to recreate on the guitar what she had heard the banjo. She played lead passages with her thumb on the bass strings, and then with her other two fingers, the first two fingers, she did a downstroke. It's hard to do. You know, when you hear it, it sounds very simple, but it's not as simple as it sounds.
Earliest guitars were small, delicate instruments, yet they could do more than banjos and fiddles. They could play chords, melody, and rhythm all at once. And that was one of the keys to their popularity. As the music began to change in the 20th century, so did the guitars. Bill Malone says the instruments and their players moved out of the parlors.
One of the big factors that encouraged musicians to look for bigger guitars and louder guitars and guitars that could support steel strings was the fact that the music moved into the taverns, the dance halls, the nightclubs, what we call out in Texas, honky-tonks.
For NPR News, I'm Paul Brown.
An interview with Maybelle Carter and an example of her famous Carter Scratch are at npr.org. Next week, the series continues with Country Music and the Moral Message.